Britain will automatically enrol nearly 90,000 companies in a customs system in order to reduce the risk of Brexit disruption. The government announcement is its latest attempt to show it can leave the European Union without a deal if necessary. More than 88,000 companies, which are in Britain's value-added tax register, will be allocated a special number to identify them for customs authorities in the next 2 weeks.
Survivors of the Parkland, Florida school shooting, who started the National March for Our Lives campaign, are rolling out their own plan to curb gun violence. The group's leaders released a sweeping proposal on Wednesday that includes banning assault-style rifles, declaring gun violence a national emergency, and starting a national gun buyback and disposal program. The plan comes weeks after the back-to-back shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio that killed 31 people.
Colombian coffee growers who have grappled with the ups and downs of bean prices, crop diseases, harsh weather, and drug wars are now facing growing competition from Brazil and Vietnam, where farmers are using sophisticated machines to boost their harvest. The steep Andean mountainside farms in Colombia make it difficult to even use machines to compete.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's August the 22nd. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots going on in the world of business. We'll update some of the top business headlines momentarily. We'll get to the numbers as well from not only the futures market on Wall Street, but around the globe. A little bit later in the program this morning, we will talk about culture in the workplace, workplace culture. The author of The Culture Fix will be with us, Will Scott, at about 5:38 this morning. We'll lead off this morning with Thought Leader Thursday, as we do every Thursday. Brett McKittrick will join us momentarily. Mental health issues front and center these days. Lots of discussion nationally about it. What about the workplace? What is the response of not only employers, but employees, too, to mental health issues in the workplace? And how do you make sure that you're covered by health insurance for what you need to help you be better? That's going to be about 5:08 this morning, a little bit after we get going at 5:11. Brett McKittrick again momentarily here this morning. Also, the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour. So stay with us here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are down about 57 points this morning, nearly a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures are off nearly a third this morning. S&P futures are off nearly a quarter of a percent as well. Around the globe, in Europe, markets are lower as well, in London, Germany, and in France. In London, off by nearly a half a percent. In France, by nearly a half a percent. In Germany, by about a quarter of a percent. Looks like a mixed day in Asia, the Nikkei ending the day up just fractionally. In Hong Kong, markets lower by about 221 points. The Hang Seng down nearly three-quarters of a percent. In China, markets up just fractionally this morning. Oil is trading at $56.10 a barrel, which is up about 42 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. A new projection from the Congressional Budget Office projects the federal government will have more than $12 trillion in deficits through 2029. That's an increase of more than $800 billion from the CBO's last projection in May. The CBO reports one of the causes behind the increase is a bipartisan congressional deal to increase spending caps that are adding about $1.7 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years. Also contributing to the increase is hundreds of billion dollars in spending on disaster relief and border security and what's left of the tax cuts that were enacted by the GOP a couple of years ago. The U.S. Labor Department downsizing the number of workers added to payrolls for the year by more than a half a million. It was announced it was lowering the estimate by about 42,000 jobs per month from April 2018 through March of 2019. The numbers are preliminary. The final figures will be out early next year. Even with the downsizing, employment gains have averaged about 200,000 hires per month. Still a healthy jobs market. Most of the jobs that have been evaporated from this issue have been in the service sector and in manufacturing and in other several high-profile positions. Federal Reserve minutes yesterday show those officials who voted to lower interest rates 3 weeks ago agreed that the move shouldn't be viewed as an indication that there is a preset course for future cuts. The summary of minutes from the FOMC meeting indicated that policymakers viewed the move as a mid-cycle adjustment, as they said publicly, but that they weren't showcasing it as perhaps the first in a series of rate cuts. It has been widely anticipated that the Fed may cut rates another two times this year. Let's begin with Thought Leader Thursday. Brett McKittrick is here this morning, Senior Vice President, Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
I want to begin with mental health. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had a national conversation, I feel like, a new one about mental health with the mass shootings that we've had, and there's been a discussion of mental health being a part of that. I want to talk about how our companies treat mental health when employees have issues that need to be taken care of. Does our health insurance cover mental health, and is it adequate enough?
Yeah, all great questions, and you're right, you know, organizations of all types, all employers are becoming more and more aware of this because many of the physical symptoms that you might see with a physical illness do not manifest themselves with a mental health condition. So sometimes it's known as a hidden or sight unseen type of a problem. Then when they do manifest themselves, it's oftentimes in a way that significantly affects that individual at work or their ability to be at work. And so one of the first things organizations can do, and a lot of it is about reducing the stigma associated with a mental health condition that does exist here in America. But one thing an organization can do to make sure that their employees feel the support of the organization in this way is checking their health plan to see what is covered. There is something called a Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act from 2008, which basically said all large group health plans, if they cover mental health conditions and services associated with them, must do so at the same rates or with the same parameters that a physical illness may have. Now, with that being said, what insurance companies may also do to kind of circumvent that law or circumvent that rule is to maybe place restrictions on the standards of care that are necessary and the tests that you have to pass, for instance, in order for something to be covered.
Give us an example of what you mean there.
Sure. So, and by the way, what I'm about to say is not the norm, but it can exist. And this is why we recommend companies really understanding their health plan and the types of benefits that are offered. But there's a young woman who suffered from anorexia, and she was unable to get treatment from a mental health provider in this area because she did not meet the minimum weight requirement that the health plan had said she must get down to before they would treat it or cover the cost of the treatment.
Right. So where do we even begin with this? I guess it would be like a frank discussion with the HR, or do we just dive into our insurance documents and try to find it ourselves?
Yeah, no, I think obviously not. I mean, that is what HR is there for. That's the human resources partners, your benefits consultants and advisors, often third-party agencies. This is what they exist for. So absolutely, if you are an employee, for instance, you go to HR, or if you have a dedicated hotline about your benefits, you can go there. From human resources perspective or from a finance perspective at an organization, if you're a professional, this is about understanding who you work with and the type of benefits that are offered and what's really hidden there.
And this could be kind of a treacherous area to wade into, can't it? I mean, there are all kinds of restrictions about legal restrictions about what you can and cannot talk about. Correct?
Well, there are from a HIPAA standpoint or a privacy standpoint, absolutely. And so, you know, there are secure and private ways of having a conversation. If you are an employee and you don't want to tell your boss or your HR director that you're going down this way, most insurance plans do have ways where you can contact them and get in touch to understand the benefits that you might have.
At the very least, don't most companies have something called an employee assistance plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes that's built in with the normal health insurance plan. Sometimes it's a standalone plan. But that employee assistance program or plan, or an EAP as they're often called, it could be merely just a referral service, or they can actually offer certified and licensed coaches and counselors that can help people with mental health conditions.
Oftentimes we hear that the stigma with mental health is one that kind of keeps people from talking about it openly, mm-hmm. from even seeking help in some cases. What responsibility does an employer have to, let's say we do have the benefits that are there in place, to create an atmosphere where information is being shared, but also where it's okay to have a conversation about it?
Yeah, and it's tough, and it depends on the culture of an organization. And quite frankly, some organizations are more parental than others. Mm-hmm. But it really will behoove an organization who cares about their employees to try to educate their employees, whether it be through their wellness program or just sort of on their own, about the stigma of mental health in general and about awareness. So, for instance, hey, here are five quote-unquote warning signs to watch for. And oftentimes, mental health conditions are easily treated and are treated, but could be exacerbated by some event, stress at work, bullying at work, mm-hmm. harassment at work. These are other things that an employer can do to try to mitigate to help all employees.
Yeah, it goes back to that culture issue. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that you can do to change the culture. God forbid there's something at work that's actually causing the mental health problem.
Yeah.
But the culture can be a big step in the right direction.
It absolutely can.
Talk to us a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act and how that plays into this conversation.
Yeah, so this is, again, on that HR side of things. You know, the Americans with Disabilities Act is designed, number one, obviously, if you're any employer, you can't discriminate against someone with a chronic medical condition or something designated as a disability. But if you're over 16 employees, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, says you as an employer must accommodate a disability or chronic medical condition unless it poses an undue burden or hardship on your organization. So if I have a chronic back problem and I go to my organization, say I need a new chair or a stand-up desk, they probably got to do it. Okay, that $1,000 it costs, man, that's not an undue burden, for mm-hmm. instance. If 95% of my job is to drive a truck and I have some now permanent disability that prevents me from being able to drive, there's not really an accommodation there that the employer can offer me. You know, the ADA never makes an employer gut the essential functions of a job. But it is a two-way street. And so what's called the interactive process is where if an employer should know of or is the attention is brought to a particular problem, the employer is not charged with diagnosing that condition. They're not charged with being a doctor, but there is paperwork that they could fill out or have the employee fill out and go to their physician or medical provider, who will then diagnose a condition, tell the employer whether it's protected under the ADA. Then the two, the employer and employee, can have a back and forth interactive process and a conversation about what they can do to maybe accommodate that condition so that person can be more productive and more present at work.
Would a mental health issue qualify under the ADA?
It absolutely would. Now, the problem there is it's often hard to recognize and sometimes even difficult for the individual themselves to recognize.
So let's say that, again, on the mental health part of this, mm-hmm. Do all of the different protections then follow? So if I were to develop a mental health problem, would I be able to take leave from work? Would that qualify under the Family Medical Leave Act?
Yeah. So that's okay. That's another thing. The Family Medical Leave Act protects that person's job and the benefits while that person's away for a serious illness or injury for themselves or others, for that matter. But if I had a mental health condition and it required me to be away and go to an inpatient treatment center, that would cover that. Conversely, and which what we see oftentimes is it might be in a more intermittent nature. So I have to go to counseling three times a week in an outpatient setting, and the only time my counselor is available is during the hours of 1 and 4. Well, yeah, you probably, as an employer, need to let me have that time off without any kind of reprimand or any bad things happening.
These are the kind of conversations you have with companies, right? This is how you help companies understand not only where they may be deficient, but how they can help.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a large portion of my job is helping organizations deal with ill and injured workers.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears here and talk a little bit about marijuana. The recreational marijuana law, it's soon going to be legal here in Illinois. We've already had medical marijuana legal. How is this going to work? The question being, there, like for instance, here in Chicago, there's discussion of putting a marijuana, recreational marijuana boutique on Michigan Avenue, not very far from where we're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Will I be able to go on my lunch hour and get high or have something like this and come back to work, or at night in the next? How is this going to play out in the workplace?
Yeah, first check with your boss, you know, he or she may. But no, it does create a very unique and interesting problem. Obviously, alcohol is legal and I can consume, but alcohol doesn't stay in the system very long. So if in the new Illinois law, for instance, doesn't allow people to be high at work, employers can still obviously place that restriction. And so it's pretty obvious if I'm driving a fork truck for a living and I have an accident and there's a post-accident drug test and it says I have this in my system and I've looked and acted high, okay, I can, I have to deal with those consequences, right? Now, conversely, and to your point, think about a pre-employment screening, for instance, which is legal here in the state of Illinois and most other upper Midwest states. An employer may drug test me on a conditioned job offer based on whether or not my future employee passes that drug test. Now, if I test positive for THC, well, that could stay in an employee's system for weeks, even months. How do we know that person is under the influence right then and there? Mm-hmm. And so actually this new law has a series of warning signs and markers that employers really need to look for if they are doing a reasonable suspicion drug test for a current employee. All the manifestations that you might think about that someone may exhibit if they were under the influence. And without those, they really can't test or hold that against the individual.
I foresee a lot of lawsuits potentially coming from this, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It just opens up a whole new world for an opportunity for our plaintiff attorneys, but it also provides, I guess, even a thinner tightrope for the employers to walk down.
Yeah, and it may be one of those situations, again, even I don't even think doing it on a Friday night would help if you didn't have to be back until Monday, because, again, those tests can pick up stuff that's been in there for weeks and months.
It is, and it's true. And by the way, this is legalized, so this falls under the use of lawful products laws in general, which says I'm allowed to smoke cigarettes and use prescription drugs and drink alcohol and now possibly smoke marijuana.
But it is important to remind people that if you show up at work drunk, I mean, it's sort of the same thing, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. Absolutely is. And so the law doesn't allow an employee to do that, and an employer can still obviously have those restrictions. It's just a finer line and, quite frankly, more of a gray area now.
So talk to us a little bit as we close out this morning on I know the future of health insurance is up in the air. We're heading another presidential campaign where we have all kinds of new proposals about health insurance. Mm-hmm. What are the trends that you're seeing here? What do you think might shake out?
Well, it is completely up in the air, and it seems like we say that every time I'm on here. But a couple of things. Number one, under current administration, the executive branch did prescribe and we talked about last time on our show, the Treasury Department to allow for kind of the first time ever what's called an individual health reimbursement arrangement, where any employers, and we see maybe smaller employers, saying instead of offering employees health insurance, we're going to offer you money to pay for individual coverage, and that money is given to you in a tax-free manner. So in other words, they get that tax benefit that they would get as if they were getting that group-sponsored coverage. This goes into effect 1/1/20. We'll have to see how the industry responds. We'll have to see how popular it will be with employers.
Doesn't it sort of coexist with the Affordable Care Act, though? To be successful, don't you have to have plans you can get into cheaply?
Yeah, you do. But here's the rub. Okay. This individual HRA, as it's called, and this money that an employer could provide for its employees tax-free is not available for exchange plans, for health insurance exchange plans. That's the IRS saying we don't want someone to be able to double dip, because those exchange plans, any individual taxpayer would be eligible for a premium subsidy tax credit. And if they're getting that, they don't want the tax-free benefit over here. So this is really limited to those individual plans not sold on the exchange, which in many states are just, quite frankly, very expensive.
What will happen let's say a Democrat is elected, or even if it's a Republican, and suddenly we find ourselves with Medicare for all or health care for all, and everybody's covered and all of these private plans go away, does your job become easier at that point? Does all of this conversation become academic?
My job does not become easier anytime there's change, ever, yeah. Anytime there's change like that. But on the other hand, what it will really do is change the game from a recruitment and retention standpoint for employers. Mm-hmm. When you think about this, outside of salary, health benefits are the largest dollar spend for an employer in terms of attracting and retaining top talent. what will happen then as a result if we do go to a single-payer system, for instance. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Interesting. So there may be more bonuses or more vacation or some other HR benefit that we don't even think about right now.
There might be, yeah.
Brett, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. First name Brett, B-R-E-T, dot my last name McKittrick, that's M-C-K-I-T-R-I-C-K, at associatedbank.com.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time.
All right, Steve. Thanks.
Brett McKittrick, Senior Vice President, Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. We do thought leader conversations every Thursday here on the Opening Bell. You can find more of our conversations at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter and head over to associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership to read more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. We're going to turn our conversation now to company culture. You've probably heard this discussion several times in the past on this program. We like to focus in on it, the idea that the place where you work should be a good place, that the atmosphere there should be a good one, and that you like coming into work every day. Joining us to have a conversation about this morning, Will Scott, who's a culture czar and author of Culture, The Culture Fix, for a more fuller conversation. Will, good morning. We want to begin by talking about just generally, and give our listeners again, remind them what we're talking about when we talk about company culture.
Yeah, so with company culture, we're talking about the way people feel in an office. We're human beings and we have feelings. And CEOs and a lot of leaders don't often care or talk about that. But it's really important. If people feel great at work and in the workplace, then they're going to be more productive, they're going to be more happier, they're going to be more loyal. So it's really those things.
How does an employer create a culture that is one that would be a good one?
Yeah.
Does it begin with something not concrete, something that's just sort of in the air, or is it the people that bring the culture?
Well, it's definitely very much about the people that bring the culture. Yes, it is. But the way a CEO or a leaders can influence the culture is by defining it with some core values. And it isn't, as a lot of people like to think, it isn't about football tables and kegerators, you know, sure. Corporate parties. It is much more valuable if you can create values where people like working together and they like working, you know, in the space that they're in and they like who they're working with.
You bring to this conversation and this discussion quite a bit of experience of your own. Talk to us a little briefly here about what you bring and how you've gotten to this point to be a culture czar.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I've been for 20 years and I've started a couple of technology companies. And I always cared about the culture there. I cared about the way people feel. One of my values is inclusivity. I like people to feel included. And so I defined that with core values. I made sure that the values were alive and thriving every day with our meetings and every week. And in that way, you can get people really empowered and making decisions the same way that I would make decisions as the leader and founder of the company. I was just going to finish by saying then that so my colleagues, some of my entrepreneurial friends saw that and asked me to come and help them with their culture. And that's how I became a culture czar. As I like to say, or a consultant in the space, yes.
And you, your clients range all kinds of different companies, don't they?
Yes, they do range, and certainly across every kind of industry. But it's a lot of it is with the smaller, faster growing companies in the entrepreneurial space, where they really want to make sure they maintain their culture as they grow fast and go through a lot of hiring.
The reason I ask that question is because I want to ask whether or not company culture is something that is specific to a certain type of company, a certain type of business. You've sort of alluded to it, that it's maybe a more smaller type business as opposed to a bigger business. And then also, how do you change a culture in a more established business?
Well, I would say, and a lot of my, you know, the protagonists around culture would say that the most important thing in running a company is the culture, whatever the size of the company. The better your culture and the better people feel working there, the more you are going to, you know, achieve the goals that you're trying to achieve. And one of the big things is the why. People want to know why they're working. So I always like to help companies figure out their why. Put that in some words. So the people are walking in to a company in the morning, liking where they work and who they're working with. And when they leave at the end of the day, they feel they've done something meaningful for the world. And that can be achieved whatever the size of the company. How do you change culture, Steve? Well, one of the main ways to change culture, if you're trying to do it quickly, is to change some of the people. Because it's often the people that do that. And if culture's not working, it's usually because there are some people there who are not working in concert with the core values or the defined culture of the company.
It's amazing, too, how those people, whether they have just a negative attitude or they're not part of the plan or don't want to be part of the plan, how they can bring down everybody else.
That's absolutely right. Yes, I remember I grew up in Zambia, and my scoutmaster used to use the expression, if you have 10 peanuts and you put them in your mouth to eat them and one of them is bad, they all taste bad. Mm-hmm. And in culture, we say you're only as good as your worst employee. You know, ouch, right? So that's right. A negative nanny in the corner of the office can bring the whole culture down. Sometimes people hang on to that employee way too long because they feel they need them for some technical reason or because they're a great salesperson. But generally, companies, when they've made the difficult decision and made the change, everyone breathes a sigh of relief. And again, the culture goes in a more positive direction again.
You have a very kind way of saying somebody has been fired.
Well, yes, I don't like the traditional sort of expression of hire and fire. So I like to talk about unhiring employees. Yes. And I talk about that in my book, The Culture Fix.
The Culture Fix, you also have, some workbooks too, and there's sort of it's a cool step-by-step for this conversation that we're having. Talk to us a little bit about some of those steps after you get going and you want to change the culture and you've decided that you're going to work on the culture. What are some of the, aside from the people, the immediate things that a company would do?
Yeah. Well, so specifically the subheading for the book, if you like, is from core values to valued culture, because I think we should focus much more on having a valued culture than simply having words on the wall. A lot of companies do, you know, dream up some words, put them on the wall, and they think their job is done and they're going to have a great culture. But no, that's just going to lead to cynicism and employees who actually don't buy it. So it's really important. And what the book is really about is making sure that people are making sure the core values are alive and thriving and being used on a consistent basis, that we're rewarding employees when we catch them committing core values, telling those stories around that. And that's what really perpetuates, you know, the defined culture, so that you can get the culture that you want rather than a default culture, which is just going to happen by itself.
Mm-hmm. And this conversation, you'll hear the naysayers poo-poo this whole discussion of corporate culture, but there have been study after study, and I just saw a recent report, and I think you've tweeted about this as well recently, the kinds of financial benefit that this brings. You have a good culture in place. I've seen as much as 4% higher revenues from mm-hmm. companies that have a good corporate culture. So there really is something just beyond treating people well and having a good workplace behind improving culture.
Yes, that's absolutely right. There's lots of studies that show a great culture does mean companies have higher revenues, are faster growing, have higher profitability, and the employees are more loyal and more likely to stick around, which, of course, is a great productivity producer. There are some great examples, right, like Southwest Airlines, who clearly have a great culture, and it's visible to most people who interact with them. And it shows in their results in the airline industry. And the opposite is also very true. A bad culture is certainly very bad for business. And examples like that, like Wells Fargo, who recently had the biggest fine in corporate history, where their core values were all about how we only do what's right for our customers. But what they were doing was, you know, creating false accounts and doing illegal things that hurt their customers. So I definitely like to call out when companies are saying one thing but doing something different. And that costs them $1 billion. So, yeah, it does not pay to not have a great culture, and it doesn't pay to be inconsistent with the culture that you've defined that you are.
Will, we're in a situation now with this economy where people feel confident that they can up and leave from their current job mm-hmm. to find another job. And maybe that's going to be a job that they have for 5 or 10 or 15 more years. What can you tell people who are out there looking for the perfect job about how to know whether the company they're looking at has one of these cultures that you're talking about?
Yes. Well, they should definitely take some time to get a feeling for the way that company they're thinking about joining is. And so you can find some stuff online, you know, on Glassdoor and what people are saying about the company. But if someone's looking to make a move to a new company and they are really going to want to feel good working there, they need to get to know some of the people in the company, spend some time in hopefully in the environment of that new company. And one of the great things to look for is how open are the folks. If they're talking openly about the good and the bad and they feel safe doing that, then that's a great sign that probably there's a healthy culture.
If the person you're talking to comes off as a hostage, probably if they right. if they remind you of a hostage, it's probably not a good sign, right?
Yes. Or they're rolling their eyeballs and things like that, you know. Right. Yes.
As we leave and wrap up this morning, I want to, if you could, leave us with some pieces of advice, maybe one for management and one for all the rest of us, about improving culture. What can we do moving forward today that might improve our work culture?
Yeah, so the first thing is to define it, and then so you're deliberately managing it and leading it. And so that's best done with core values, but they, again, must not just be words on the wall. Let's really make sure you're using those every day. And then, you know, for leaders, I like leaders to think about they're not just leading a company anymore. They're leading a culture. And think about that as being upstream to your vendors and your suppliers and downstream to your customers. And where you can do that and you're working with folks that are aligned with your culture in both directions, then that is, again, going to feel good, and it's going to be very, very effective, too.
And if you're the negative ninny in the corner, do something today so that you don't get unhired.
Exactly.
Well, it's wonderful meeting you. Thanks for coming in today. We want to tell people, too, they can head over to culturezars.com. That's your website.
That's
right. All this information's there, right?
Yes, yes. And thank you for having me, Steve.
It's wonderful having you. Thank you. Come back anytime.
Appreciate it.
Will Scott, he's the author of The Culture Fix, From Core Values to Valued Culture Using 9 Deeds in 90 Days. You can find him more, again, online at culturezars.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a couple of the stocks this morning show a little weakness on Wall Street heading to The Opening Bell. Dow futures down 43 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures off nearly a third this morning. Now an update on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade slightly higher yesterday, with a nearby wheat contract up 2.75 cents a bushel, December corn up 2 cents, and November soybeans up 4.25 cents. Livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange saw the lean hog trade lower for the day, but cattle and feeder cattle traded higher for the day. The annual Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour took an interesting turn yesterday. Department of Agriculture said it had pulled all staff from the annual crop tour after an employee was threatened. Three sources said the threat came over the phone from an angry farmer. And Lance Honig, crops chief at USDA, said that USDA staffers left the Pro Farmer Tour immediately, and police will be present on upcoming stops of the trip, which will end for the day today. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, August 22nd. The latest report on first-time claims for unemployment benefits is out today. Analysts don't expect much change. They're forecasting 219,000 U.S. workers filing for initial jobless claims. That's about 1,000 fewer than last week. Also today, the Jackson Hole Economic Policy Symposium begins in Jackson, Wyoming. The annual gathering of the Federal Reserve and others associated with monetary policy and financial markets and economics runs through Saturday. Also today, the leading indicators, the EIA natural gas report, the Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index. On the earnings calendar, Dick's Sporting Goods reports results before the markets open. Gap, HP, and Salesforce will release quarterly earnings after the market closes. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, August the 22nd.